Not far from the city of Córdoba in southern Spain is a village called Belmez. One morning in 1971, an elderly woman went into her kitchen to see what her grandchild had cried out about. The grandchild had cried out in delight, not fear. But that's just because the grandchild did not know better. On the pink tile floor was the imprint of a face that had not been there previously. It looked worried, troubled. The woman tried to clean it off, but the more she scrubbed, the wider the eyes grew, and the face looked more and more sorrowful. This was obviously upsetting to the owner of the house, who had the floor torn up and replaced. Just 3 weeks later, a second face shows up in the exact same spot. The features on this face are more defined. And now the authorities get involved. An official inquiry is made. They have that section of the floor cut out and removed. An excavation under the section of floor that had been removed reveals the remains of a medieval cemetery. But somewhere else in the kitchen, a third face appears. Then there's a fourth apparition, then a fifth, and then a whole series. The whole kitchen gets sealed off for good. Of course, it's not long before more faces start appearing in other parts of the house. Three of them men, one of them a woman. All of these faces seem to be in agony. Later, during a study, someone decides to bring in ultra-sensitive microphones. They did pick up voices that were not audible to the human ear. The moans and cries that they recorded were a perfect match for the very visible torment of the faces in the floor. I'm Albie Robles, and I want you to scare me. John Montelongo is a paranormal investigator, but he doesn't just investigate. He gets stuff out and is usually brought in when no one else is willing to come. When you have a case that seems a little bit too rough, a little more heavy than paranormal investigators usually like to deal with, John's your guy.
All right, so I'm John Montelongo, also known as Spooky Boy. I'm a paranormal investigator. I'm also a professional photographer, a storm chaser, and an urban explorer. As far back as I can remember, the paranormal stuff has been going on since I was probably a baby. I've seen shadows, I've seen unexplainable things, but as I grew up, I kind of was just ignoring it for a while there, but even though there were still things that were happening, and I just kind of totally dismissed it, you know. But then as I gotten older, you know, I was just kind of like, okay, this is getting my attention a lot. So now it's been almost 25 years that I've been doing this. Now that I'm here at a certain point, I'm started realizing, well, hey, I'm not the only one in my family that's been going through this. So I started to look back into my family history on my mom's side and my dad's side, you know, and I found out there was a lot of like witchcraft involved. There's a lot of other forms of, you know, the paranormal involved, you know, the necromancy, all that stuff, you know. So we come from a long line of this type of work, so to speak. But, you know, now I'm kind of like changing directions a little bit, because now I'm doing the investigation part kind of like more towards helping people as opposed to, you know, the witchcraft and all that other stuff. So my aim now is trying to help those people who are getting haunted by, I don't want to say demonic because that's too much of a strong word, but that's what people know it as, you know, so something of that nature. So now I go in into these places and I do that. You know, so that's what I do, and that's where I took the spin on what my family used to be right now. When I was 19, I started night stalking at a big grocery store, and I would find myself in there every other night, you know, kind of working by myself. And then as I'm working the aisles, I would hear my name start being called, like on my right side of my ear, and I would see shadows, you know, on my left hand side, and it would continue like that for a long time. But then there were some incidents that happened in my life that kind of made me question, you know, the higher authority and God and stuff like that. So once I started looking into other things, it was kind of like I opened a lot of doors, and that just became part of why I started getting into the paranormal, you know, because I wanted to know, you know, is there something wrong with me? Is there not something wrong with me? Am I the only one that's feeling this? And, you know, my dad didn't, he had abilities, but he did not express or talk to us, or he kept it all to himself, basically. So then when I started seeing stuff and hearing things like that, you know, I wanted to talk to him about it, but he was just kind of, you know, gun shy, so to speak. And he didn't want to bring it up or anything like that. Or he would just right away refer to the Bible, you know? So it took me out of that loop to find out what's going on within our family. And then for me to just jump in myself and figure out what's really going on, you know? And then from there, I discovered I also had abilities as well, you know? So that's how my path in the paranormal kind of started, was just like with the little kid and then becoming into what I am today. The way I went about it was, it's kind of hard to do that type of research, especially trying to find out what they dabbled in and what their religion was and stuff like that. So you actually had to go and talk to my older cousins, my their mom and dad and all that other stuff. So, I mean, it was a lot of phone calls. It was a lot of taking trips and all this other stuff to actually get that information, because it's not something that you can just get into a book and be like, okay, I wonder what my family did. You know, you actually had to go and talk, you know, to some of my uncles who are now, man, in their 70s, 80s and stuff like that. And, you know, even with my great, great, great grandparents, some of them were already, you know, they were just kids, you know, but they do remember, like, yeah, we went to the woods and they would go in a circle and they would burn and all this other stuff and dance and chant and nah, nah, nah. And I'm like, just writing everything down. And I'm like, so who was there? Who was this? Well, your great uncle from over here, your uncle from this side, your aunt from over here. Your aunt knows more. Go talk to her. And I'll go all the way over to talk to her. And then, you know, she would be like, well, I don't want to talk about that. So you may have to go talk to your other uncle. You know, then I would go to him. And it was just a bunch of back and forth. I guess the past was so stained that, like, nobody in our family wants to talk about it. You know, it was that bad, because I did have an uncle who did tell me that it sounds kind of odd, but they said because of what they did, in order for them to gain power, so to speak, that they would actually go kill other tribes or other people to get rid of them, so that way they're able to take on the power, you know. And I was like, what? You know, and then that's when the whole necromancy started coming in. And I was just taken back by it, you know. So I was like, really? You know, but uncovering that type of stuff is kind of like, okay, in the paranormal field or in the spiritual realm, you start seeing like, okay, there's curses, there's chains that are linked, you know, from that, but what they did coming all the way up into us, you know. So it's just a matter of fact, like, where do you need to start at and who do you need to really talk to, you know? And like I said, it's still continuing, because there's still family members who don't want to talk to me about it. And a lot of our family were like a bunch of curanderos, you know, like healers and stuff like that, but they dabbled more into the black magic area, you know? So it's a little crazy. I'm based out of Temple, Texas. We are originally from Oregon, from Lebanon, Oregon. I'm with two teams right now. So I started off with Blue Bonnet Paranormal. They're out of Moody. I started off with them and kind of worked my way into like an lead investigator. You know, we started setting up cameras at first, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, as my abilities gotten stronger and there were some cases and everything just became second nature to me, you know, which was very odd, but it came very second nature to me. So then I started getting in, you know, into the position of the lead investigator. But there was a difference there between me wanting to know more facts than anything else in the investigations. So I decided, well, I'm going to start my own team, and that's the Dark Explorers Paranormal Team. Now, with this team, I do have like three or four mediums on my team, along with a police officer who brings more of the investigative type of you know, the paranormal stuff, you know. So he's more fact driven than anything else. So that's crucial to me, because I need somebody who is kind of level headed and has been there before and wants to see outside the box besides paranormal stuff, you know. So even though my team, my Dark Explorers team is, I got like six people, they're still kind of new to the cases that I bring. And when I say that I bring, I want to say I don't do like normal investigations. So I actually take on the cases that it's either life or death for these people. You know, either they're going crazy or they're thinking about suicide already. It's gotten to that point. So I go in there and pretty much try to face whatever is there face to face. And, you know, I go in there with with God and try to take care of what they need to take care of and try to help those people out. Now, so like the paranormal team that I have, they're still kind of green in that aspect. So I'm slowly training them, but at the same time, some of these cases, like they need them done now. You know, they don't got time to wait for, you know, another 2 weeks or anything like that. You know, so, you know, the most recent one that I had, I mean, they literally called me 2 days before and this guy was saying, I don't think I'm going to make it for the weekend. I don't think I'm going to be here for the weekend. You know, so I had to literally almost drop everything and just like go, you know, take off four or five hours to drive and just try to get up there as soon as I can just to help this person, you know, so. It's a little bit of a difference between the two teams. Usually it's DFW and the Houston area, but I've traveled all the way up to Wisconsin, Louisiana. I'm going to Kansas in a couple of weeks. I've done stuff in Oregon. I was going to take on a case in California, but that kind of took a little small turn for another direction. So that I didn't get to go on that one, but I am pretty much all over the place. Last year alone, I recorded 74 cases, almost 2 or 3 months. It would seem like every single day I had a case, you know, and it wasn't like your run of the mill type of cases. You know, these were just very consuming, so to speak. So there's been cases where, hey, I need help right now. I'm getting scratched. My babies are getting scratched. My daughter is getting pulled underneath the bed. I mean, it's weird because it's like nobody really talks about those cases, but those cases do exist. But you'll be surprised how many teams do not even want to take those cases because of what they are and afraid that they might take them home with them, you know. But I've been tested a lot, so I always say that God has my side, you know, no matter what, you know. So that kind of enables me to face whatever is there face to face, you know. And some people just don't want to do that. I, for one, don't use a lot of equipment. You know, I kind of rely on my instincts. What I usually use is like a recorder and stuff like that. You know, so what I capture, you know, people can see right away. There's no SLS cameras or anything like that. You know, I just capture what I see is what you're going to see, you know, or at least I'll try to, you know. But with that being said, I mean, there's even locations where the owners have kind of messed with the location a little bit to give that extra hype, you know, on the house or the location itself, you know. So but that's where we do our part as an investigator to figure out, you know, what's really there, you know, if what they're saying is actually matching up with the history of the location and such, you know. So if you're a good investigator, I mean, you'll find go through it, you'll find all the details and what is actually supposed to be there, you know, or not be there. The only thing I really use is like a night vision camera, my recorder. Of course, I'm a photographer, so I'm taking photos during the day and going to each room and trying to capture what's there. I'm starting to use my 35 millimeter now, simply because that's also another thing. Another theory of mine is just like because of the energy that's there and the chemicals that the 35 millimeters use, you know, it leaves kind of more of an imprint on the film than it does like a digital camera, you know. So I'm still trying to experiment with that and trying to take back, you know, I guess the old school ways, you know. As far as photos, this one was captured by accident. This is like one of my urban exploring stuff. And I was just traveling the back roads of Texas. I see an old building and it says like diner on the front. And so I get out and this is around maybe 11 o'clock in the afternoon or something like that. So kind of cloudy. I just thought it was a perfect shot. So I get out, start taking pictures. And once I get back home, I had this new paper that I just ordered. It's like, it has like pearl and it's polarized, you know, so it, the colors stand out more and it's more black and white. So I'm like, okay, cool. You know, so I'm starting to go through there and I have like a little magnifying glass and I'm just checking, you know, see to see if there's any bleeding in the ink, anything of that stuff. Then I go to the window and in the window, I see clear as day, like a whole entire face along with a long silhouette. And I'm like, no. I'm like, I literally just captured my first, you know, ghost photo. And I'm like, nah, I'm not going to show anybody this. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna keep it here. Then the next day, my friends come over and I show them. I'm like, can you tell me what you see on this picture? And everybody pointed out that thing. And I was like, thank God. Like, it's not just me that there's actually something there, you know? So that's one of my very first ones, but man, it's like, for me, it's always like a hit or miss with the like ghost photography, you know? So there's a lady on my team named Mary. I mean, she gets ghost photos like all day, every day. And I'm like, how do you even get those? You know, kind of frustrating. As far as like EVPs, I mean, I get things talking to me every single time. You know, I hear a lot of disembodied voices as well. Some of that stuff, like I'll hear it in my ear. And even though the recorder is right there next to me, I don't even pick it up on the recorder. You know, and that's still one of the things I'm still trying to figure out. Like, how is it not picking it up? And it's literally right here, you know, in my hand, you know, it's or right next to the bed, wherever it needs to be, you know, but it's still super odd. But I mean, I've had a lot of evidence when it comes to that, you know, the audio stuff, you know, so I've gotten things that threaten me. I got things that cuss out at me, you know, even I guess cryings and stuff like that, screaming, you know, it's I have a lot of stuff on audio, but I'm not gonna say the location, but this was one of the worst cases I had simply because of my abilities. I didn't quite understand them yet. And I haven't gotten to that point to where, you know, I can control them. So, and the reason why it's one of the worst cases I have because of what happened to me. So as we're investigating throughout the night, I started feeling kind of odd. And it was like, I was starting to see like everybody's face kind of blurry a little bit. And I was couldn't quite think about what was going on. And then all of a sudden, it was like, I don't remember most of the night, but they were telling me that I was always in the back room in the corner, like just sitting there, like, you know, just like I was praying or something like that, or just kind of watching everybody. Then after a while there, I would try to open portals within the location simply because whatever was there was telling me that it needs to come out. Let's just say there is something tragic that happened there, right? The portal is kind of like how somebody went and did a ritual and is opening a door to the other side for whatever is on the other side to come in. So while we were investigating, my friend Russ, another investigator, he was actually trying to close some of the portals that were in that one room where I got possessed at. So while he was doing that, it was like something was telling me, he's closing the portals, go open another one, let me in. So I was like, okay. Lights are turned off and everything. I would literally just walk through the hallways, try to find a place. And each place I would go, they would tell me, John, don't do that. So I would literally go, they would close one in the bedroom. And then I would wind up going to the restroom and try to open one there, you know? So as they were closing other ones, I was trying to open other ones, you know? And then, it got to one point to where something just literally just took over me. I was screaming at everybody. I was telling everybody to F off. I was throwing equipment around. The last part of it about it was as they're escorting me out and I had two other investigators walk me out, I grabbed like, this place has like those old school light bulbs or those big, huge ones. And I went to it and I was putting my hand on it and unscrewing it with my bare hand. And they said they could hear my fingertips like sizzling as I'm unscrewing this light bulb and I'm walking out and just F this and F that and all these other things. I finally go out across the street where they finally took me out And as soon as I got across the street, it was like something lifted from me. And then I started throwing up like some black tarish type of thing. And then after that little black tar was like blood, started throwing up some blood after that. And I don't know, it was just like everything snapped out of me. And I was just like, what in the hell was that? You know, I have no idea what that was, but that was kind of one of the intimidating ones for me. Cause I didn't know anything what was going on, you know? So that kind of put a little, I guess a fear in God in me. So I was just like, okay, from now on, I'm going in with God right there with beside me. I'm not going to do this anymore like that the wrong way. So I grew up into this. So like I've seen, as far as I could remember, I mean, I've seen shadows. I've heard them. I even heard them talk in tongues. You know, you ever seen that movie or played the video game Silent Hill? Okay, so the original one where they have that pyramid head looking guy with a big knife. I actually seen a shadow like that 2 or 3 years before that video game came out, you know, and the instance was that my cousin was going through a lot of stuff. And I guess my aunts had decided to come from West Texas, you know, to join in the celebration. I think somebody was getting married, and I overheard them talking, my mom and dad and them talking about what was going on with my cousin. So, you know what? I was like, you know what, before I go to bed, I'm going to say a prayer for her and all this other stuff. I was like, okay. So I go to my room, get on my knees, and I'm praying. And then I started asking God to take care of her. And as soon as that happened, I felt like something come up right behind me. And on my left ear, I heard like the deepest growl. Like it was so deep. And like literally everything stood on me like bad. And I was just like, please God, please God, please God. And this was like way before I knew anything. And I mean, the energy in it and the evilness and the hatred was just so overwhelming. I literally just like almost cowered down a little bit. And then when I got done with the prayer, I finally look off to the back, and in our hallway, you could see the shadow. It was like a little pointed head. Like a pyramid, and it just started walking out. And I never forgotten that. And then when that Silent Hill video game came out, I was like, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I saw. Like I saw that. And I've only felt that one other time. And the other time was in Wisconsin when I was there for about a week and a half with taking care of a family who was in, oh my gosh, under demonic attack. And, I literally was like face to face to it. You know, I drew a line with prayer, and I told it, in the name of God, you are not going to pass this line. And I literally heard the two big thumbs, boom, boom, right in front of me. And I just felt like the huge breath on it. And I could just hear the growl. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, and I'm in complete darkness and I don't see anything, but I could see the silhouette of it, you know, how big it was. You know, just like, oh my gosh. And then the other investigator and the client were behind me while this is taking place. And I could hear them, because they were, even though they were whispering, I could hear them say, do you see how big that is? Do you see how big that is? And I'm like, stop talking, man, because I'm literally right. It's literally right in front of me. You know, so yeah, that's the case that changed my life, was that one. That one literally took a toll on me and just completely changed how I approach stuff now, you know? So yeah, that's one of the scary ones for me.
So is that more typical with demons of the silhouette, like a large silhouette growling, that kind of thing? Or does it not limited to that?
It's not limited to that. You know, I believe that they come in stages, so to speak, which is, you know, the infestation, the oppression and the possession, stuff like that. But what was going on in that house was kind of like in the early stages. There was something demonic trying to get in because of what was going on with the family. I don't want to say that I did exorcisms, because I'm not going to say that, because that's what we did was not that, you know. So I would say that I performed like a rite, which is try to get that entity off of them, that attachment off away from them. So that's what I did. And I did that for almost, I think it was like 4 or 5 days straight. They had six to seven people inside that house, all ranging from 40 to maybe 6 or 7 year olds. And then the 6 or 7 year olds, something was telling them to go into the kitchen and get the knives and cut everybody's throat. You know, I'm in that house for almost a week and a half. I'm sleeping in the basement where I literally got something grabbed my ankle and yanked me out of the sofa. It almost threw me off of it. And I was just like, okay, something's bad here. I have no idea what it is. And it was just like little instances, right before that whole face-to-face thing that I did with that thing. I woke up one morning and I found the other investigator who was already saging something, because he was already saging all the rooms because something had happened to him that night and he just could not sleep. And he just was like, okay, I'm going to start. So I woke up to that and I was like, what in the world is he doing? You know, and I followed suit. So I was following him. So I went and got my holy water and all that other stuff. So I started from the basement working my way up when he was on top working his way down. He had motion cameras all set up in the hallways and all that other stuff. So I was the only one that was in the basement. I started from the sauna room, started praying. And then I went into my bedroom, which is like, I guess the recreation room. Went inside there. And as soon as I came out to turn the corner to start the other rooms, the motion sensor went off. And I was just like, that's weird. Maybe it's recording me. I don't know. Okay. Well, fast forward, we're eating dinner and he's all reviewing all the evidence. And then he's like, holy crap. I was like, what's up? He's like, you'll never believe this. And he showed it to me. So as I'm walking into the recreation room and I come out and I'm blessing it and I turned the corner, there was something that was probably, it looked like maybe it was like 7 foot to 8 foot tall, super, super wide, that was following me from each room as I'm praying each room. It was literally following me around. Like I said, that case was something that changed my life. And like my way of thinking, the way of encountering these things, you know, somebody else may want to do it differently, but the way I do it is all through God. The prayers, everything that I do is through Him. You know, I don't do any other way, you know, simply because I think it's almost like a drug addict, you know, because the stuff that's in my family history, I don't want to give whatever they did that power again. So I'm trying to stay pure in what I'm doing to help, you know. So everything is through God, and that's how I do the investigations. That's how I do the cleansings and all that other stuff. So as things were getting worse, I remembered. So I keep a journal like this that has like all of my cases. Every single one of my cases are in this journal. Everything from just thoughts, theories, things that I just pick up on randomly. So before I had that case, I told one of my good friends, like, I don't know what it is, but I feel like I'm going to encounter something that is life-changing. Like, I have no idea what it is, but I feel like I need to get ready. I need to get ready for something big. I don't know what it is. And, you know, so we almost talked for almost half a year, just, what is it? What is it? What is it? And then all of a sudden, I started getting these visions about a road that goes straight and then comes off to the side, one to the left, one to the right. And I'm like, I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. You know, so I would sketch it out, put it in the book, put, you know, question marks all over it. Like, I don't know. So the last rite that I did on the family was so draining. Like I literally had, after I was done, I felt like I was polluted, so to speak. So as soon as I was done, I had to literally go take a break and just walk outside. Now keep in mind, we're in Wisconsin. It's snowing. Mm-hmm. They live almost 2.5 hours from anywhere, you know, so it's already dark and I'm getting close to getting dark. I mean, and I'm walking outside and I'm just talking to God, like, you know, help me, help me, help me. And then it hits me. Like, I literally turn around to go back in, and then there's the road. and there's the right, left, and the right, the left side, and then the right side. And this was the turn, the moment of my life turning event. It was just like, okay, you know, either I'm not going to work with you, God, or I am going to work with you. You know, so I chose from that day on to work with God. You know, so it was always like, hey, you got your family history thinking about all this stuff and what they did and all this other stuff. But now is the turning point. Now is to either decide what you're going to do. Are you going to work with me or not work with me? You know, and you're here at the biggest case of your life, life turning events. Everything is changing from this point on what you decide. From then on, I was just like, okay, I'm giving my all to you. Everything is going to you. Everything I do from now on is all you. It was the most dangerous case, and it was also one of the cases that turned everything for me.
Do you want to try to scare me? If you've had or have heard about a paranormal experience you'd like to share, or if the area you live in has a particularly scary legend or lore, I want to hear it. Send an email to scareme@albirobles.com. Scare Me is produced by Albie Robles Voice and features original music by Adam Clifton. Additional sound beds are provided by Stephen D. Voiceovers. You can follow us on social media. We are Scare Me Pod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. For voiceover booking information or to inquire about having your own podcast produced, go to www.albirobles.com.